All right. Welcome back. Welcome back to the show. Nashville Talks with Taylor Jones. Hashtag Nashville Talks on Twitter. That's us. We are coming to you live from the Music City, USA. And
well, not really live.
Well, kind of live.
Kind of live.
It's live right now. It's
live if you're on Instagram, you're live.
Yeah, Instagram live. But it's live to us right this minute.
We're live in your car or wherever you're listening to this.
Exactly. But this is a show where we discuss all things Music City, all things music. That's what today is going to be. We'll get into that, you know, momentarily about what we're really getting into today. But how's it going today?
Today's been good. It's been a little nasty weather, so yeah, we're seeing a lot of people kind of retreat, not come out of their houses.
Yeah, it was really slow out there today.
Mm-hmm.
From what I was doing, that was kind of sucky, actually.
Yeah,
but we made it to the end of another day.
That's right.
And no real complaints. You know what I'm saying? Still mm-hmm. kicking, like a roach on his back. Still kicking.
Yep.
And right now there's a Randy Travis tribute thing going on in the Bridgestone Arena. I'm sure it's awesome. Mm-hmm. We should probably be there. But Randy's one of my favorites. I didn't realize he's in such bad health. I just looked it up on Google to see what was going on. And he had a stroke a few years ago, evidently, and had a bad stroke. They didn't think he'd make it. But hey, he did. He's still here. He still made a full recovery as best as he could, walking and talking again. And, you know, that's a pretty big victory from a stroke, you know.
No doubt.
Tough business right there.
Mm-hmm.
So so that's what's going on in town today. Other than that, it's basic, you know, winter in Nashville. January, February, Nashville's pretty slow, brother.
Slow, and you never know what kind of weather you're going to get day to day.
Oh, man, yeah.
Hour to hour. I was in short sleeves over lunch.
Yeah, and now it's cold
it was
again.
Freezing when I got out of work.
Yeah, it makes no sense. So, yeah, that's kind of what's going on in our lives. I'm fixing to go up to Delaware and meet my friend Cage and his wife Kelsey, and we're going to go, Kyle and I are going to go and lead at Lifehouse Church for a couple of days. Being their youth retreat, winter retreat, I guess you'd say it. We did the summer retreat over the summer, which was awesome. That was like a week long. And so this one's only a couple, 3 days, but we're excited nonetheless. It's a good church up there that we go to. I've talked about it in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm thinking about taking my little recorder up there and see. There's a couple people worth interviewing up there, so I can maybe get some back stock on some interviews for us, because mm-hmm. there's a couple of really awesome potential interviews up there that I need to get, and then that'll bail us out a little bit, because we're like
right.
paycheck to paycheck with the sucker right now. Barely getting by. Sorry we missed a week, well, forgive us, but you know, it just was hard. We had the interviews, but then the one episode we didn't really like, so we didn't put it out,
right?
Which that was just me and him doing an update. Nothing big. No guest got snubbed or nothing.
No.
But then this week, we put up one with my brother, and, you know.
That's pretty funny.
Telling funny stories?
Yep.
Okay, I hope so, because, like, I haven't listened to it yet.
It may only be funny to us, but.
Bunch of you had to been there stories.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't there for some of them, but I know Steven. So.
Yeah, you have to know this guy. I got to get him on the freaking show. So, it would, man, he's a trip, dude. He is a bona fide trip.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess, okay, so. As we talked about before, we're just trying to figure out how to come up with a good podcast for you good folks, okay?
Right.
And we don't really know what we're doing. We're just kind of like fishbowling ideas a little bit, you know, and trying pulling names out of a hat and listening to other podcasts and looking what they do and what can we do that's kind of our style, not ripping them off, but what can we learn from mm-hmm. the people that are doing this on a big level. So one thing that we both sort of kind of thought of at the same time was we want to do the occasional classic album discussion where we pick a, you know, a big time hit album, whatever that may be, from any era, from any genre of music, just anything that, you know, was a big time success and something that we feel like most people have heard of or be interested in or whatever. And we're just going to, you know, listen to it and research it and come up with an hour-long discussion about that one album, because I think there's a ton of real estate there you know, for that kind of a thing, especially when, you know, the way that we listen to albums today is so different from the way that people used to listen to them when they're on, you know, vinyl, whatever you call it, plastic, whatever you call that stuff. And you had to listen to the record straight ahead. So,
right.
The record that we're going to do this week is Rumors by Fleetwood Mac. So
great one.
Yeah, we figure, you know, starting the top 10 of best-selling albums of all time. I don't know. Right. Hopefully, if enough people follow us on Twitter at hashtag Nashville Talks, that's at Talks Nashville. That's the closest I come to a good to the title there. But hashtag Nashville Talks, you can't miss it. And follow us there. We'd love for you to do that and suggest from time to time albums that you think would be a good subject matter for research and discussion. And if so, then we'll roll with it, because this is y'all's show just as much as it is our show. Anybody listen to this, consider yourself an owner and a stockholder, because you're right. Making about as much money as we are off of this thing. So I'm losing money, actually, but... That's okay. I don't mind doing it. It's a good hobby, and it's fun for us to do. So
definitely,
we're gonna go over Rumors here in a minute. But tell me, you listened to it more than I did. I mostly did research.
Okay,
but I know the record pretty well, and I did listen to it once.
Right
here, just a minute ago, while I was fiddle farting around in here.
Is that what you were playing drums to when I walked in?
No, that was some of the worship songs for the retreat. I was shedding in and.
I thought but it I sounded too four on the floor, straight beat.
Yeah, you know how I am about these worship songs, man. Like, I don't... Sometimes I feel like it's a little rigid and that drummers are forced to play things that they wouldn't really want to play.
Mm-hmm.
But who am I to even have an opinion on it? But there's that. But I'm going to try to do my best to play those songs correctly.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, and since you... just brought that up with the worship songs, how you're kind of forced to play a certain way for those. What rolling right into talking about the album. One of the things I found really interesting about the album is, and this was a lot of the way most of these albums worked back in the 70s and such, is if you could get the time and basically try to track this album while the record label wasn't looking, you could pretty much do whatever you wanted in the studio.
Mm.
And that's where the best records are born, when the producers and the bands get to work just alone, without distraction of friends, attorneys, like I said, record label executives. If all of those extra people could stay out of it, you can actually create a great piece of music.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes for all the instrumentation, even all the way down to the drums, where the drummer doesn't have to play just a straightforward pop beat to try to make a radio hit.
Mm-hmm.
He plays what is necessary for the song to be mm-hmm. a great song.
Well, and you know, the idea is to be free in what you're doing and your expression. And that's a whole nother podcast topic for a whole nother expert, as far as I'm concerned, because that's deep water. And like, you know, what is a hit song anymore? You know what I mean? I don't know. I'm not saying it's all formulaic, but I'm saying there is a formula that exists.
There's definitely a formula.
You know, and I think, in the past, you used to have a little bit more of a little more grease, where you could kind of be yourself a little bit more. And, you know, would Jimi Hendrix even make the FM radio today? I don't know. You know, that'd be interesting to see. Like, is he too outside the box? Is he too not popping? I don't know. But in 67, he was pretty over. So that's all I'm talking about right here.
For sure.
But, and you know, little backstory, you said a little something about that, you know, having the freedom to do that. But getting into some of the facts here, man, they freaking, what they would do, according to, and I did a lot of research online about, you know, different people that were there for the production of this record. It was mm-hmm. like the two engineers on it were, hold on a second, I'm looking for say, the personnel names. I do here in a second. Sorry, I'm still learning how to read here.
Because I've read a book by one of them.
Really?
About this album.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
When was that?
That was years ago. So I was trying to remember some of it. Some of it I remember, but...
Okay, here we go. Ken Calliott and Richard Dashut. I think
it's Calais, by the way.
Calais, Ken Calais and Richard Dashett.
And fun fact about Calais was he was the actual engineer, and they ended up giving him producer credit because of his involvement in helping shape the songs as
Which
well.
Which always with all the happens.
Sounds. Yes.
Freaking always happens. There's so many guys that deserve producer credit that didn't get it out right. there in the whole business.
But they actually, the band ended up pulling him in and said, we're going to give you producer credit towards the end of the project because of everything he did for the record.
Okay.
But fun fact about Mr. Calais here is he is Colby Calais' father.
Whoa, you're kidding me.
Nope.
Who freaking knew that?
And he produced her four records, her first four records.
Holy cow. Well, so, yeah, that goes to my other theory of you got to have a daddy or an uncle or a cousin in the business.
Right. It was just interesting to me to see kind of finding that, and I found that out more recently. But to kind of see, okay, this great mind that was kind of behind the board and behind producing one of the greatest albums of all time, seeing what he does with a current yeah. artist.
Isn't that nuts how it still works, you know, and his ear was still good enough to get her over?
Yeah.
You know, or what, not only that he, I mean, she got herself over, but...
She's still amazingly talented, yeah, but...
But like, so going in, talking about the excess and everything, that basically what I read in my research is that it would be like a long cocktail party, and in about 2 a.m. when everybody's as, you know, gone as they can possibly be, that's when they start working.
Yep.
You know, and it was like, okay, and that's, they said that that's when they made their best music, was that yeah. when they got to that point, which I guess that's the '70s, man. A lot of people thought that, but
for sure.
Anyway, I'd like to get into some of the let's back up here, and we're gonna start now. Fleetwood Mac has a long history going back to like 1967, and by the time that they recorded Rumors, this was their 11th album.
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous to me because, like, you know, bands just, we don't record like that. Like, back then you would have at least one record a year, right?
Yes. Something some bands crazy. Did like two a year.
Yeah. And, like, honestly, that's kind of the direction we probably ought to go now because of the way people, like, you know, they consume it so fast.
Mm-hmm.
And especially with everything being on singles on iTunes now, that's a whole other discussion as well. But so we're going to start, as far as our history goes and our research, is going to be starting in 1975 with the addition of Stevie Nicks and Lindsey Buckingham to Fleetwood Mac. By this point in time, Fleetwood Mac is Mick Fleetwood on drums, John McVie on bass, Christine McVie on keys and vocal, and then, of course, Lindsey Buckingham on guitar and vocal, and Stevie Nicks on just vocal, I'm guessing?
Yeah, and Stevie was just vocal. She did play piano as they were writing and such.
Okay. So, and then you have, like, lots of songwriters. I mean, that was a great, great addition there. However that came to be was a great idea. And boom, they're off to the races. So, 1975, we get the second Fleetwood Mac self-titled album.
Yeah, which they've... it's also known as the White Album. Of course, not to be confused with the Beatles White Album. Okay. But yes, it was their self-entitled White Album.
I got you. So they have huge success in their first record together with this current lineup. Lots of good stuff, you know. So now here we are, 1976, and it's like, well, we got to follow that up. So,
well, in fact, real quick before you get too far into it, part of why, as I mentioned earlier, they were able to kind of go off, seclude themselves, and do this record alone is because that previous record was doing so well by the time they started tracking this record. The record company was just eating up all the sales, and they were basically like, okay, Fleet Mac, you go do whatever you want.
Yeah.
It's when bands start kind of sucking wind that they start getting really involved in the record-making process.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, continue.
So, you guys, you're doing right. Let's go. Let's do this. So, I thought it was interesting, the choice of studios that they use. So
yeah.
So they recorded at the Record Plant in where was
starts
it
with an S?
Yeah, hold on. I'm looking. I have it wrote down here before somewhere. looks like Sausalito, California.
Yeah. Beautiful city.
Yeah, so what the Record Plant at that point was LA, New York, and Sausalito, as far as I know. Three yep. different locations. And the thing about the Record Plant, if you know anything about studios, is now a lot of them are this way, and most of them are this way, but it's very, like, you know, living room-esque. Couches, candles, dark, you know, cool art gimmicks everywhere. You know, like, most every studio is like that now, whereas before, like, if you see all the pictures of, like, when the Beach Boys were in a studio in the 60s and the Beatles, it was, like, really fluorescent light, and
right,
you know, a little more what you
it's just a workroom.
Yeah, like very work looking, very very sterile looking. Whereas the Record Plant was maybe one of the first to do it this way and to sell their thing as like, okay, well, here's the vibe, you know?
Right.
And now it seems like that was a heck of a trend that they started, in other words. So I think that's interesting that sort of the sound of this record sounds to me like it was recorded in a laid-back place, kind of.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, like just the way that, to, and we'll get into some of the drum feels and all that stuff later, but mm-hmm. like, you know, it's the way that some of that felt, it, to me, it felt like, you know, it was a very comfortable, you know, groove and everything. And everything was patient. Nothing feels rushed on that record to me.
Right.
So, it was recorded, recording started, I want to say, in the end of 75 and early 76. So, now, here's where the Fleetwood Mac drama exists. And mm-hmm. this is stuff that I didn't know until I watched this classic album thing on them.
Right.
And it's like, oh my gosh. But I never really listened to Fleetwood Mac a whole lot if I didn't have to growing up. Like, I like a couple of their songs, but it was one of those things where, you know, classic rock radio, I grew up on that, and it was just, honestly, it was so much on the radio. Mm-hmm. It was on the radio so much that, like, pretty much anything that played on classic rock radio, I grew to hate it over time.
Right.
Because it was just so many times you had to hear it. And that's just, you know, you get educated that way and it gets burned into your memory that way. And that's a good thing. But at the same time, like, you know, too much of it will turn you off. And I finally just had to quit listening to classic rock radio altogether mm-hmm. because it never did. You know, they play the same 40 songs all the time.
I remember at one point you got, I think it was the first one I'd ever seen, you got like a portable XM radio.
Oh, yeah. I did have one of those because I was so tired of.
Because you were tired of hearing the regular radio.
Yeah, I did. And I never could really get that rig to work like I wanted it to. But now it's all in your cars yeah. and stuff. But that was some, I think I got that for Christmas one year. But I did my research because I wanted more access. This is like you're talking 2005. So, like, yeah. you know, this is before like Spotify and things we have now and
before iPhones.
Yeah, and all that. So, like, this was my thing for, this was my answer to that. You know, this was going to be my way to find more music to learn and play and
right.
all that. Man, I about forgot about all that before you mentioned it. That's awesome. So, here comes the drama, and we'll just go ahead and get into it. But so John McVie and Christine McVie were married. Okay, right. Bass and keyboards and singer. Well, evidently, after 6 years and 6 months straight of touring, they decided to call it and got divorced.
Mm-hmm.
So this is before we go in to record the record.
Right.
So anybody that's been through divorce, God bless you. I think it's the hardest thing, you know, one of the hardest things in the world. But I don't imagine going in to make a record with that person would be a whole lot of fun, do you?
No, and making a record, touring, I mean, this is an intense time in their lives.
Yeah.
And they are being forced to essentially stay together.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, back in that era, people just, they were tough, man.
Yeah.
Like, they could just put up with so much, you know, stuff. And whereas, I don't know, I feel so weak sometimes. Like, I can't put up, I don't, you know, deal with anything. I'm like, yeah. At least a little thing happens, I'm ready to roll. But that's tough. And that's business right there. If you can separate business to that point where you know it's a moneymaker. So maybe if that was on the line and I was, you know, well, this is my job, I'm making a pretty sweet living off of it. You know, maybe I would. I don't know. But that's a first line. And then, as I say, you know, dang, right in the middle of the height of their career. So then Lindsay and Stevie were kind of a couple. And then that was on again, off again, mostly off mm-hmm. by this point. And
yeah, and like you said, it was off going into this record.
Exactly. And it was over at some point in the middle of it. Like, they're not going to happen anymore. Like, the conversation was had.
Yeah.
And as far as I know, Lindsay wasn't really happy about it. So
I think the producer, as he was talking in his book about this, he called this the record of tears.
Oh, yeah.
Just because there was so much emotion going on in the creation of this album and such. And you can hear that in the lyrics of the songs.
Yeah, it was described as like, okay, the way that they did it was, it's like a journal and a diary of these people talking about each other, but right. through music. So that I never heard of before, really. I'm sure it's happened before, but like as far as like on a grand scale of a pop artist, you know, that's pretty nuts to me. So Mick Fleetwood, his wife evidently left him for his best friend at the same time. So everybody's just coming into this thing just sucking, as far as I know.
Right.
You know, everybody's involved. So it's just a really hard time. And if you can imagine the drug scene back in that era too, like, you know, geez, man.
Yeah.
Add that in there and it's going to be a lot of problems.
There is a little bit of a misconception about this record and Fleetwood Mac in general that they were just super coked up when they did this record. That was Tusk. That was the, that was the next record.
Well, that was bad too.
But the producer did say that there was a bag that would go around. It was a community bag, but they didn't treat it like a straight vice. They treated it like, okay, I need a cup of coffee. I'll just do a little line of coke.
Yeah. Wow, that's interesting. I didn't know that part.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the drama going in. Now, getting back to recording. So we're at the record plant, and they couldn't even. To this point, the only conversations that like Lindsay and Stevie were having and John and Christine was business conversations only. No social anything. Mm-hmm. Like dysfunction to the max, but functional. Functional, dysfunctional kind of thing. They were staying, the men and women were staying at one house the guys were staying at another. Does that make sense? Yeah. While they'd show up to work a lot of times at different times if they could help it. So mostly at night, recorded late at night. Here we go. You know, like you said, you know, a lot of unlimited budget.
Yeah.
Unlimited budget. You know, whatever you need. So you can imagine whatever drugs you need, whatever food, whatever drink, you know, they could get it. So anyway, Lindsey Buckingham was, I guess, in my opinion, he was kind of the pop guy in the band. Like, he got pop music.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think, you know, it shows because before he was in the band, it wasn't as much of a pop band.
Well, it used to be actually more of a blues band.
Exactly. Which,
and by the way,
Peter Green and all those guys.
Yeah, and even the lineup change where Stevie Nicks came in and everything, that was really like the third or fourth version of Fleetwood Mac. I mean,
that's what I read.
You've got like 10 albums before this one. There's bound to be some lineup changes.
Yeah, I mean, you would think so. So, I mean,
but the rhythm section always stayed the same.
Yeah, exactly. So, anyway, you got all this stuff, new relationships, drugs, cocaine, nobody talking to each other, excessive in every way. And so now let's talk about some music.
Okay.
So, what do you have, like, and we'll go over each of the songs briefly as we go, but some of the songs on the record, so Dreams, Go Your Own Way, Never Going Back, Don't Stop Thinking About Tomorrow, Songbird, Oh Daddy, Gold Dust Woman, on and on and on and on.
Yeah.
So do you have a favorite song on this record?
I would have to say, just because of the pure power behind it and because I have to know kind of the creation of this song, the story behind it and everything, The Chain is my favorite song on the record.
Okay, tell me about it.
So The Chain, of course, so the first bit of the album was actually just recorded in 4 months up at that first studio.
Okay.
And then they did the rest of it in LA.
Yeah, that's right.
And in fact, pretty much the entire album was written in the studio. You know, producer sitting right there, he's watching everything getting formed, just out there on the studio floor. And so The Chain was one of those where, you know, right in the middle of the song where the bass line kicks in, the dum da da dum da 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 dum dum, that whole thing. So starting at that point to the end of the song was a completely different song. It wasn't
really
The Chain.
See, I didn't know that.
Yep. And so the song was not going over well. They could never figure out the chorus on it, but they had that big jam at the end of it, tracked in the previous studio. And so during all the tracking, Stevie had an actual room down the hall where she would go because she didn't play anything, mm-hmm, in the rhythm section or anything. So a lot of the time she didn't have anything to do. So she'd go down the hall to another room with a piano, and she would just write songs, and she'd run back in the studio saying, hey, I got this great song. Just wrote the best song I've ever written in my life. Mm. One of those ended up being Dreams.
Wow.
But she had at one point kind of concepted this The Chain, kind of the earlier part of it. And so they kind of morphed the two together back in L.A., as they were trying to figure out what to do with this song. And then Stevie said, well, I got this bit of this song, and they just started piecing the songs, individual songs together to create The Chain.
Interesting.
And in fact, it's the only song on the record where every member of the band has a credit on the song.
That's right. I did read that.
Yeah. Wow. That's why.
Well, cool, man. Well, that's interesting. I didn't know that about that one.
But even it sums up kind of the whole thing with the whole breakup stuff too. If you don't love me now, then you'll never love me again. I mean, once you kind of understand the story behind the record and what was going on, all these lyrics start feeling way more impactful.
I got you.
So that's why it's my favorite.
I got you. Well, I think my favorite two songs on there, if I had to pick one, I'd take Goldust Woman.
I kind of thought you'd say that one.
But that's just because I just love that sort of, I don't know, just that that drum vibe and just how patient it is.
Yeah.
You know, and the lyrics are hot, and just the way that they did the production on the drums on this whole record. To me, it's like the typical, or not on typical is a bad word, but like the signature sound from the 70s.
Yes.
Like the tom sounds and the
fat snare,
the snare sounds and everything, like
clean, you know, bass tone.
Yeah, yeah, like it just, that 70s production, there's just something kind of nice about it, you know. And I thought that this song especially, you know, with the way that he has kind of some randoms in there with the tom fills and stuff, and again, like, that's my style of drumming. Like, I love that style of drumming these guys do back then. And when you hear him playing on, like, if you ever try to play along to, like, Dreams, for instance, for a drummer, it's tough because you can never remember exactly, unless you have a hell of a chart, exactly what those in-between fills are in the top of the chorus and in between the chorus, you know? Like, I know the crash is on whatever, on the one end or whatever, and that's cool. But, like, everything he did was perfect.
You want to know the secret behind that?
What is that?
It's a drum loop.
Is it really?
Yep. They the part that you hear, of course, he does a little fill at the beginning of the song, then it goes to the boom, chirp, boom, chirp. That's a drum loop.
Okay. Well, I'm down with that.
He recorded it. But
what I'm talking about is all the Philly stuff in between.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So because that loop was there, then he could just come over the top and just play little fills and things.
Oh, you bastard.
He cheated.
Well, anyway, that you try to play along with it was my point. Is this difficult? And now we know why it's difficult. Because he used a loop and then he went ahead and did some fills on top of it. But he's so in the pocket, and then those fills come in even better. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It's a tough song to really vibe, you know, to really get it right. I always feel like when I'm going for one of those fills, I'm losing the groove a little bit. Like, it just, but that's probably why, is because it's flat underneath there.
Yep.
And it never leaps.
Well, and that's actually why they looped it.
Okay.
The main groove, because he was trying to just play through it and they couldn't get the drums right.
Is that so?
Yeah.
See, I did not know that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's good stuff. So, I like Goldust Woman, you know, and evidently she says she wrote that about, you know, just the hardships of living in L.A. It's just such a big city and hustle and bustle and whatever, and big. It's easy to feel overwhelmed there. And so that's one of the biggest rock stars in the world saying that. So I can't imagine what it'd be like for you or me.
Yeah.
Live there.
She talks about it in the record before, like in her songs, but Stevie Nicks used to like clean people's houses for a living room. And she would, when she kind of got hooked up with this studio and record label and such, she would trade cleaning the executive's house for free studio time.
Holy cow.
So that's where songs like Goldust Woman, I mean, that's 100% truth. She lived that. She worked for where she got.
I love that, man. Well, that, I don't know. I just love that song and just that vibe. And it's always one of those ones that I always wish that we could, you know, in our band could have played at some point. And of course, I'm playing along with this thing and I'm going, like, I'm sure somebody's done a really cool Fleetwood Mac tribute. But it'd be sick to go see one of those one day, you know, here in town, because you know how these hot musicians are.
Yeah.
And the other song I really like on there is I Don't Want to Know. I just think that's such a hooky, you know. Yeah. It's such a hooky little deal. And I love Lindsey Buckingham anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And just his voice and his style and everything. Like, that guy is just so talented. And I just like that hook on that one. So
that's before the show I was telling you about. There were songs listening back to this record I'd kind of forgotten about and kind of lost track of, and that was one of them where I was like, oh, I forgot I really love this song.
Yeah. It's just so, I don't know, just the hooks are just never ending in that thing. Like, every line is a hook.
Yes.
So I like that.
I do have a second favorite, by the way.
Okay, what is it?
Never Going Back Again.
That's a good one, too.
It's the third track on the record. It's acoustic. Me and my dad have this argument every time we talk about this song, but I'm convinced that there's no way that it's one guitar part.
Mm.
I'm pretty sure he's doubled up, tripled up, something. But however he does it, it is one of the most beautiful guitar orchestrations or whatever. it's a great guitar part. His vocals come in and over the top. Background vocal swells within the song. But for such a stripped down song, it's such a nice piece for the record.
I love that too, man. That's a great one. So I want to talk about the shuffle on Don't Stop.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, when I think about learning how to play a shuffle, right? Like a pop music shuffle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is the shuffle to listen to. Because, I mean, you can do a lot of things with a shuffle as a drummer. But, like, if you're talking about the meat and potatoes and, like, the money part of it, like, that right there, that shuffle will preach. You know, even yes. 40 years later, whatever. Like, that thing is so there and so in the pockets. Your basic, you know, quarter note shuffle with quarter notes on the bass drum. And just a real simple snare, backbeat. But, like, the stuff that he's doing with the hi-hat in between and then his crashes and stuff, like, dude. And his time. Like, his time is so money, Mick Fleetwood. His feel and his time. And so I just think, like, that's not my favorite song on the record or anything as far as, like, maybe it's kind of heard a zillion times.
Sure.
But, like, I love that shuffle, and it's a great exercise for any drummer that, you know, is listening to this. Like, go hit that song and... You know, I learned how to play shuffles by playing along to, like, Statesboro Blues and all those songs on the Allman Brothers records. And they're just straight ahead shuffles. No real fancy to it.
Right.
But, like, dang, bro. Like, you get on this thing right here, and that is a great, tasteful pop shuffle, in mm-hmm. my opinion. So,
and I wouldn't say that's my favorite song on the record either. But I definitely, when my iPod's on shuffle and that song hits, I definitely crank that song.
Yeah, you know. So you told me you had some songs you didn't like. So tell me the songs you didn't like.
I'll be honest, I can't remember the name of it.
Here, I got you. Wait okay. a second. Just the top. They're a deluxe version or something. Don't look at that.
Oh, my gosh. So much here. Songbird.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little too sappy for me.
Too girly.
Yeah. And Silver Springs, I like okay, the last track on the record, mm-hmm. but that's the second song where I'm...
I got you.
If I would have done the record, I would have left those two off, personally.
I got you. Well, somebody likes Songbird, I guess.
Yeah, I think Songbird's like the number one downloaded song on the record.
Yep, so show us what we know. But, you know, that's why it's good to have women in the band. Men would not let that song be on the record. It's true. So,
and it, if you've not heard the song, it is a very beautiful song, but it is just so, just moaning, kind of hurting woman behind a piano or over a piano playing, just a very sad kind of floaty song. Like I said, it's well done.
Yeah.
It's just not my favorite.
Got you. So the original working title for the record was going to be called Yesterday's Gone.
Yep.
And that was sort of the plan, so to speak, until somewhere down the line, John McVie suggested that since this is journals and diaries about each other and the songs, that they figured they could call it Rumors. And so that's just a little
name.
Little nugget of, you know, I didn't know that until I researched a little bit today, but who knew, man? That thing was going to be called Yesterday's Gone, which probably would have worked fine, but Rumors is so much more... I don't know.
It's more meaningful.
Yeah, and it captures the brand and everything of the time as well. And I mean, you say Rumors, everybody knows what you're talking about.
Right.
Like, that's what's crazy about that freaking band title name. So let me ask you this. Since you read the book on The Engineer, tell me about the mixing problems they had with the tape. About how they overused the tape to the point that some of the audio tracks, like the snare drum and the kick drum, sounded so lifeless they didn't think it would be able to use them.
Yeah, this was pretty late in the process. Like, they had the album pretty close to done.
Oh, yeah. Fall tour booked.
Yeah, fall tour booked.
Sold out.
We're looking at trying to print the final mixes and release the record soon.
In September. The original record release date was in September.
Yeah. This is kind of the good and bad thing about what they did with tracking. So... a lot of times when you've got record executives and things in the studio, they want you to work on a song until you get that song perfect. You're done. You move to the next. What they would do all the time while they were in that first studio, and even once they got back to LA, they would work on Dreams for a little bit, and they would say, okay, let's play with the organ part on Dreams for a bit. Okay, we're done with that one. Let's move over to the next track. And so they would just hop songs constantly, changing the tapes out. And for people who don't know, back in the day when you recorded music, it was to analog tape.
Mm-hmm.
So anything analog like this, it has a limited life. A vinyl record, to tape player tape, you know, all this stuff, you can wear it out.
Yep.
And so that's exactly what happened. As they were getting later in this process, the tape started to degrade to the point where, like Taylor said, where they thought they weren't going to be able to use it anymore. And I forget exactly how they resurrected this, but they had some sort of backup tapes, basically.
Well, what they did, they had, now mind you, they had the whole tour was booked for that fall because the record was supposed to come out in September and it was sold out. And it was like, oh crap, we got no record because we can't finish mixing it.
Right.
So that's got to be a headache and all in its own right. So they had to hire this specialist guy to fix the tapes. So he had to use what's called a very speed oscillator, which I don't know what that is.
Yep.
But somehow I think it has to do with using two tape reels at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And what he did is he put the damaged tapes coming through the left side of the mix, like headphones, and the safety masters in the right.
Safety masters, thank you. That's what I was trying to remember.
And somehow through the snare and the hi-hat tracks, that's how he kept time. That's how you kept the time in place.
Right.
But through that method, somehow kind of way, he was able to fix the tape.
Right.
So that's what took so long. A lot
of splicing and piecing that together.
That's what took so long with the mixing process leading. So the record doesn't even come out until February of the next year, 77.
Mm-hmm.
So now you have your U.S. tour, you know, 7-month-long tour. And the first leadoff single was Go Your Own Way.
Yep, as it should have been.
Yeah, it's good, you know, up tempo and everything. So Stevie Nicks was quoted as saying that the fans kind of didn't know what to do with them because the tour was mostly, you know, new material that a lot of them haven't, like, you know, whatever, grown to love yet or haven't studied yet or hadn't listened to the record yet.
Sure.
So they got a lot of weird reactions at first. So it kind of was like, oh, crap, they're not liking this. You know what I mean?
Right.
But now, mind you, the band's not even talking throughout this hardly this whole time.
Pretty much going to their own buses and...
Yeah, and just going that way. But eventually it must have caught on because it ended up being one of the biggest records ever. So getting into some of the numbers, the number one record in Canada, United States, UK, Australia, and New Zealand. And it ended up spending 31 weeks on the Billboard Top 200. So that's pretty crazy. So only in a few months it went platinum, which now you'd be lucky if your record went platinum ever.
Well, mostly because you can't sell records nowadays.
Well, yeah, only people like Candace Taylor Swift Incorporated. Like, can sell records now.
Right.
So it ended up winning the Grammy in 78 for Album of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
It had 4 top 10 singles. And to date, it has sold over 40 million.
Wow.
40 million records. So 2 times, you know, Diamond, which Diamond is 20 million, which who hits that anymore? I don't know if anybody can, hardly. But it's the best-selling record in United Kingdom history. It spent 630 weeks on the UK Top 75 chart, which that's over 12 years if you're doing the math.
Oh my gosh.
12 and a half years or better. And it's the sixth best-selling record in the history of the United States. So Fleetwood Mac, as of a whole, has sold over 100 million records worldwide.
Wow.
And, you know, pretty good reason, I guess, to grin and bear it and get back together all these years.
True.
And ignore each other and whatever, you know what I mean? But goodness, can you tell me about 100 million records worldwide?
Can't imagine.
That's like Michael Jackson territory.
No doubt.
You know? So, anyway, that's kind of about what I know about that record. I mean, what do you think sort of the pop culture significance of it, you know, the impact that it made?
I don't really know, to be honest.
A lot of movies, I'm just saying. A lot of movies and commercials and stuff that it's tied to and things of that nature. So, along with just, you know, capturing an era, you know, really capturing an era of production and of, you know, just the sound and the way that bands played in that era, pop bands.
Yeah. Kind of, it very much captured a very honest and true sound to what they were and what they were doing, and it's just a sound that you don't really hear anymore. Mm-hmm. So I think that's, even now, that's part of why people still gravitate back to albums like that.
Yeah.
And that one in particular.
And everything comes back around. And I'm sure, you know, somewhere is trying to, you know, that sounds a lot like that, you know, and if not yet, they will one day.
Yeah.
You know, there will be bands that have that sound again. Everything comes back around, you know, similar, not, it's not going to be the same, but it'll be similar. And as we don't mean to sound pessimistic on today's music, I promise we're not 100%. We're just 90%. So, but that's our first classic record episode, I guess, bro.
Yeah. Before we head out, I did want to kind of throw a challenge out to everybody. So, especially in today's culture, where music is absorbed so quickly and so easily, it is very easy to go, you know what, that the band worked really hard on that one song. They just threw a bunch of other songs on the record because the label said they had to. But really, people, artists look to make the hit song. There are artists out there that try to go for a complete album and make a lot of music that actually means something. But even when they do that, the public generally will look at the 1, 2, 3 hit songs on the record, and that's all they'll ever really listen to.
Mm-hmm.
So the challenge, and part of why I'm excited to be doing this series within the podcast, is to start listening to full albums again.
Mm. Make albums great again. Oh, sorry.
That's great.
There are great albums out there. That's the thing.
Make great albums great again.
Yeah.
So if you're listening to this and you haven't heard Rumors, or even if you have and haven't listened to it in a while, go sit in a room. Don't put
or car
or whatever. Well, I'm actually going to say not the car.
No.
Don't be distracted with driving or doing this, that, or the other thing. Go sit down. Don't put earbuds in. Sit in front of some speakers or some bigger headphones, something that where you're going to get the full range of the record.
Mm-hmm.
Just sit down and listen to the album front to back. Don't skip a single song.
Right.
Listen to it for everything it's worth, mm-hmm. because they poured their heart and souls into this record. And it's worth listening to, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, you know, as to say, you know, it's just another way of doing things. You know, like, I don't think there's anything wrong buying singles or skipping songs
not
or
at
whatever.
All.
But
there's times and places for all that.
Yeah. And as a person who, you know, whatever, has made a record or two in his life, like, the process, the way that we want it to be presented, If an artist had their way, it's for you to take the piece of art and just run it straight, you know, and have a listen and pick your favorite songs that way, you know, and go along with it and everything. But it really is summing up a series of, or a period of time for a person or a group, you know, and it's like, here's what I've been through the last 2-3 years, and here's my expression of it best I can in song, and hope you like it.
Yeah.
You know, so again, like, far be it from us to suggest anything, but if we're going to suggest something, you know, we would suggest that. So,
absolutely.
So I hope you guys will, if you like what we're doing as far as this concept, you know, let us know, because we need your feedback. We don't have, you know, anybody telling us what to do or anything like that. We need you guys to tell us what you think. And if you like this, then please go take it to either the email at nashvilletalks@gmail.com, or if you're a Twitter person, go to hashtag Nashville Talks. Find us, find our page, and we'd love to hear your feedback and your critiques or whatever it may be. You know, we think this is going to be fun, and if you have an album that you like to discuss with us, send your questions, send the album suggestions in, send in some questions, you know. We'll see what we can do for research and try to make another run at it. So this is our first stab at it. You know, we figured we'd take one of the best records ever and try to talk about it.
This was a fun one.
Yeah, I'll also recommend if you can find that classic albums thing on online somewhere.
Yeah. It's not on YouTube. I looked.
I know. It was on Netflix for a while.
Yeah, and they took it off of there too.
Yeah, so you'll have to, you know, go somewhere and find it. But if you can find it, it's worth watching, you know, to hear them say it from their own perspectives, you know, and like it's pretty crazy to think that what they were able to accomplish in doing it. And the fact that I guess they're even still touring now, which is occasionally, you know, which is pretty remarkable, you know, all five of them, divorces and everything.
Right.
It's like, wow, man, that is a heck of an accomplishment. So who knows what we'll do, man. We'll see what the next thing is. Again, this concept isn't just based on 70s records. Like, I'm sure we're going to talk about, you know, like an Adele record or something soon. Like, some kind of hit, awesome record, anything that you like and other, you know, we'd love to talk about it. So,
yeah.
Any final words over there, King Fisher?
No, I think that about sums it up.
All right. Well, we appreciate you. If you've hung in there this long, you're a gentleman and a scholar or a lady and a scholar, and we appreciate it. And we look forward to coming weeks of more who knows what podcast material. But, yeah, we'll talk more at y'all later. Bye-bye.